Fourth and final hour of Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Do you know an estimated 1.2 million people right here in the U.S. are living with or in remission from a blood cancer? Join ESPN The Game Nashville for Light the Night Walk at Nissan Stadium. That'll be Friday, November 2nd. You could be the difference in saving a life by being a part of the 2018 Light the Night Walk. For more details or to be a part of the event or to contribute to ESPN The Game Nashville's team, visit thegamenashville.com. We're going to actually flip-flop Buck Rising and head coach Mike Vrabel, because we might want to touch on some stuff that Mike Vrabel said after the second day of practicing with the Bucks. So we'll talk to Buck Rising coming up at 1:15. But right now, let's hear from the head coach Mike Vrabel after practice today.
Okay, you had a little bit of a scuffle there, but it seemed to nip it. You and John helped nip it in the bud pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to do. You know, get out there just like the officials, and they do that in a game, and hopefully they break them up. And really appreciate the way they practiced. You know, I really appreciate the way that Tampa approached these 2 days. Our team, the way we approached it. I mean, they're pro athletes. They're pro football players. They're competitive. They're going to talk. They're gonna chirp. Like, that's what we want. Like, you know, JPP going against Taylor Lewan. Like, that's supposed to happen. There's supposed to be battles. It's competitive. It's professional football. They pay him to rush. We pay Taylor to block. And so as long as they remain professional, which is I think they did, I'm glad we were able to get the work in.
What did you think of that specific matchup over the course?
I think, you know, any time that going against another elite player, there's some, you know, you win some, you lose some, and that's what this game comes down to, is one-on-one matchups, and you have to hope that by the end of the day in the game that you've won more, you know, than you've lost.
They felt like they weren't disappointed about yesterday, but they thought they had more to bring.
You know, we've tried to focus on each and every day. I think made the corrections from yesterday, and maybe individually some of those guys felt like they could have played better. I could have coached better. Everybody could have done a better job. So I did like how we started today. I could have wished we would have finished a little bit better, but certainly where I was on the offensive side of the ball, I really appreciate how we started.
Impressed with the day that Adoree had, and also are you impressed with the backflip?
I didn't see the backflip. Saw the ball get batted down. So if he wants the backflip after he intercepts the ball or bats it down, I'm all for it.
Do you feel like you gained, maybe learned about the team over the 2 days that you wouldn't have learned if it had just been another practice?
That's a good question. I think that you learn how maybe they adjust to a new scheme that they haven't seen. I mean, we didn't watch Tampa, I mean, before they got here. We just put our plays in and went out and practiced. And I think that you understand how professional they are. I appreciate the fact that they can, you know, we demand a lot of them. We ask them to go hard. And then that they can still take care of the other team coming in here to practice like it was our own and not doing anything silly or stupid that could get somebody hurt.
Have you discussed with your coaches, Coach, how long you'll play the starter schedule?
No. No. Watch this tape, honestly, and then I'll let you know tomorrow. Just because they got some good reps in, that may determine how much or how little they play. You know, we got to take a look at some guys, too. Some guys need to be evaluated, you know, and see if they can play pro football and make our team.
What's up with Delaney?
He's being looked at. I'll let you know after. I probably won't let you know, but hopefully he'll be okay.
How would you compare?
Did you laugh at that, Paul?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
How would you compare these two practices to a preseason game? Do you get more or less?
No, I think you get more because you can probably get exactly what you need. You get as many third downs as you need. You get the exact situations you want. It just, you don't have that live tackling contact. They're cutting our D linemen. We're trying to cut their guys on certain plays. You know, taking care of the football on a live tackle. That's what you don't get. But other than that, man, I really thought they practiced well, that the pace of practice went on. And I know that, you know, it wears on a little bit when you do the special situations, but you never know when those are going to come up and it can help you win a game.
Brother Will Compton, how important has that signing looked now with how much you've had to rely on him here the last 2 or 3 weeks?
Well, we enjoyed our visit a lot with Will, his professionalism, how much he loves football. He's excited every day that he's in the building. You know that he's here. He's got a good good vibe to him, and he does. He learns quickly. You know, the new concepts that are going in. He normally rarely makes a second mistake. You know, he gets it fixed and moves on to the next play.
Mike, the first offensive play, the first half or the second half, have been auctioned off. Is that something you like? You're looking forward to it? Do you turn your head? Do you hope they don't call a punt? How do you look at this?
So anytime we have an opportunity to use our platform as an organization or the game and to raise money and awareness for, in this case, juvenile diabetes research, we're all for it. Like I told him, if it works, I'll tell everybody I called it. If it doesn't, I'll tell everybody you called it. That's how it goes.
Do they spend the day with you guys? Is that they go to the facility?
Yeah, we met in the morning. They came in and met, and we kind of showed them some plays and some options of what they may want to call. And then I think after that, I think I saw them around here. I'm not sure after I came out and started practicing.
You talked about how demanding you guys were on the players every day in camp so far. How would you describe the personality of the football team up until this point right now?
The personality, you know, I think they care about each other. I think they do. I think you see them trying to build some bonds and some togetherness. I think they're improving. I think at times competitive. So, you know, that's why you do training camp. That's why you have training camp, is to improve as an individual, improve as a team, and then come together. And they spend a lot of time over here, and you know, you see them over in the door or the hotel, hanging out before bed check.
You said at times competitive. How much more can they give you in that department?
Well, I think always. We all have a little bit more. And I wouldn't read too much into that. I guess I'm just saying that, you know, you want to try to stay consistent all the time and stay, you know, it's hard because sometimes the offense is going to make some plays and then the next day the defense is going to make some plays, and that's kind of how it goes. So I think that being consistent right now is critical, that we can come out here every single day and continue to improve and understand what the practice schedule looks like or what the situation looks like and be able to adjust, because that's how it goes in a game. It's just first down and then you could be in the red zone, or it could be third down and then now something happens and the offense has to go. So just understanding the situations each and every day is going to be important.
We got to see Rashawn out here running the ladder and doing some light sprints. Is it safe to say that he's progressing as far as his path to get back on the football field?
I think he's doing everything he can to get better. And you can see that that's part of it. When he's ready, he'll be back out there.
Coach, you've been through a lot of camps as a player. This is your first one as a head coach. What did you learn from this camp?
You know, that you can't ever have everything scripted in June and say this is exactly how it's going to be. Here's the schedule, print it, and make sure everything's followed to a T, to be flexible and understand what's best for the players, what's best for the organization. Practice schedules may change, what we wear each day may change, when we meet may change. I think just to have the ability to, you know, keep your knees bent and head on a swivel is probably the best thing I've learned.
Coach, a quick weather question, actually. What's it like playing in these cooler, somewhat wetter conditions?
It's great. It's great because, yeah, you know, with the heat, really, you have to be careful. You have to make sure that guys are hydrated before they go out there. And having kids that played in Houston, played sports, and especially football in Houston, understanding how important it is to be hydrated when they go out there and not just 20 minutes before exercise. I mean, our guys are hydrating the second they walk in here. Some of them are getting IVs. And then when it does get a little cooler, maybe we get the ball wet and we can actually handle some situations that come up with, you know, when it rains or the ball's wet or it's muddy and we have to handle that ball. So it's nice to have a little bit of cloud cover and deal with a little bit of rain as well.
What's the number one thing you think this team accomplished during training camp?
I don't know. You know, I don't know that yet. I think that we're still kind of in training camp. I mean, we haven't played our second preseason game yet. So just because they're not going to live in the hotel tomorrow night doesn't mean we're not in training camp. You know, we're going to be in training camp, in my mind, next week going through Pittsburgh and trying to improve and develop and get better. But I'll have to get back with you.
There you go. Some of Titans head coach Mike Vrabel after practice today. against Tampa Bay. We'll come back with Buck Rising. We'll talk to him about practice as well. What did he observe? We'll do that on the other side. You're listening to Darren and Donick on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You've been listening to the show today. We had Titans general manager John Robinson join us. Titans running back Derrick Henry. You just heard from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. To now Buck Rising, the host of Tackling Music City. You got big shoes to fill, man. You got to live up to what we've just had the last three segments.
I didn't hear a single name that was bigger than mine, Darren McFarland. So I'm here for all of your Titans needs.
So you were not scared away by what I just said?
No, not intimidated in the least. I play fast and aggressive, as Mike Vrabel would say. So I am here. Let's do this thing.
So what was your takeaway from 2 days of practicing with the Bucks? What stood out to you? Let's start on the positive side, and then we'll go to maybe the negative or concerned side.
On the positive side, I thought the defensive secondary had a really nice day. Malcolm Butler gets a lot of extra attention just based on who he is and based on the plays that he makes at practice. So when he gets burned on a particular play, he attracts a lot more attention than someone otherwise might. But he and Adoree Jackson had a couple interceptions. Logan Ryan looked sharp again. The two safeties, Byard and Vaccaro, looked like they were handling themselves pretty well. And then Delaney Walker, until he ended up going into the locker room, made a couple nice plays for the first-team offense against the Bucks' first-team defense. And that's what you're looking for. Marcus looked like he was settling in a little bit, like his comfort level with the defensive backs that he was working against looked improved. I thought it was a pretty good day on the whole.
What about concerns? What was something that jumped out to you on the other side of things over the last couple of days?
The fact that Delaney Walker didn't finish practice,
okay.
No injury update. So we will not know. We can only speculate. But he was helped into the locker room by the training staff. It looked to be, if we're going to talk in hockey terms, because I don't want to put any labels on things. But I would classify it as a lower body injury. He looked like he went down working running a slant pattern. I believe it was in one-on-one drills earlier in practice. But, yeah, the fact that he didn't finish, I think, is your chief concern at this point.
I read he was limping. Is that what you saw him leaving the practice field, limping?
Yes. Yeah, he looked like he was walking gingerly, I would say. Walking, but limping is probably accurate.
Yesterday we talked a lot. That's why we wanted to play Mike Vrabel and then talk to you afterwards, because we would have hit on this a lot more.
Well, I appreciate that, yesterday, by the way, because I got to eat my lunch.
Yeah, well, there you go. See, so everybody won with this.
It's a win-win.
Yesterday he talked about, Marcus Mariota asserting himself and just went into all of that and the leadership. And so we talked about that for a little bit afterwards. What did you take? You were there. You were standing there. What do you – because we got into this with Tim Hasselbeck today. We played a couple of the clips. Where did you think Mike Vrabel – because I kind of felt like maybe what I thought was a little bit different than what Willie thought was a little bit different than what Tim Hasselbeck thought. What were your thoughts when Vrabel was actually, I thought, opening up about a topic?
Yeah, no, I think he was really good on one of those moments in terms of, that hits you right in the football feels, right? That was one of these classic coach sayings or something like that that made you feel like, well, this is, you can see why this was the guy, like one of those cheesy football moments, like this was the guy that was supposed to be brought in to work with Marcus Mariota and develop his assertiveness, and then Marcus, it would in turn level him out a little bit, I believe he said. Paraphrasing a little bit, but yeah, no, I thought that was interesting. I thought based on how little that we're actually given insight on from these press conferences, because it's day 16, people are running out. I mean, how many times can we talk about Marcus's face? But that was a unique moment, and I thought it spoke to what Mike Vrabel's doing here and what John Robinson believes that he can do, not just manage a football team on the whole, because he is supposed to be the CEO of the Tennessee Titans. If you're looking at it from that perspective, this is somebody who needs to be a manager above all else, and I think that was just kind of a look into Mike Vrabel's management style and what he expects to get out of this quarterback and what they think that he can do if they are in fact successful at bringing that out of him.
Okay, so what do you think he was trying to say there? Because I took it as, when I hear talking about him and the leadership and him asserting himself more, it wasn't about him flipping tables at halftime when they're losing. It wasn't about him barking at receivers, you know, when they run the wrong route or they weren't where they were supposed to be, like Tom Brady does or Phillip Rivers or other quarterbacks. To me, look, he has the room. We know he has the competitive spirit. To me, I felt like it was the head coach saying to his franchise quarterback, hey, man, if you see something we don't, man, tell us. Like, hey, that play's not working. How about we do this? What did you think Mike Vrabel ultimately was saying about Marcus Mariota?
That he's just a hugely agreeable person. I mean, Marcus Mariota is, it seems foolish to say, but it's kind of like the draft profile of him coming out, right? Like the only red flag was that there were no red flags. He is so willing to take coaching, it would seem, that it can get to a point where if he feels uncomfortable with what he's being asked to do, that he might not necessarily say so and let it be known that this is how I think we should be handling this situation, or this is the play set that I believe that we should be running, and kind of like maybe pushing back a little more is what they would like from him ideally, just based on what he's comfortable with. And I think it's not like he's incapable of doing that. I mean, Marcus is just a genuinely nice guy, and so he's going to take all of this in stride and then go out there and try to execute what you're asking of him. I think that Mike Vrabel understands the fact that this is just somebody who needs to be, or who has a different style of leadership. I don't necessarily buy in on the rah-rah in your face, Tom Brady, I'm going to eat your lunch if you run that crossing pattern wrong again, type quarterback or attitude from a quarterback. And I think that they're just going to have to learn to adjust to that. And Mike Vrabel's aware of it, but there's probably strides that they can make on that in terms of letting them communicate more effectively with each other.
We talked to John Robinson earlier today, and coupling that with what you heard from Mike Vrabel, and I think it was Jared that asked the question about, you know, what are you most excited about, or your best accomplishment in training camp, or wherever the question was.
And was that the one where Mike told him that's a good question? Because that was gross, the look on Jared's face.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
It was a later question.
If I was Floyd, I would just go home, because he's going to talk about that for 4 hours.
Oh, yeah, but there'll probably be some replays on that.
Thank God Mike Vrabel didn't say Jared Stillman's name, otherwise we would hear that being played on our air until the end of time.
Fair point. But I guess what I'm driving at, he said, you know, I still view us as still in training camp, even though soon here the roster is going to start getting smaller. There won't be as many people out there. You'll start to get closer to what you're going to see in the regular season. But I think the theme that I'm seeing is you have to be patient. This is what John Robinson stressed to us, is you have to be patient with this process when you're putting in a new offense and a new defense and you have a new head coach. So I think that is the challenge, is you have that process, but at the same time you have a team that has pretty high expectations to win right away.
Yeah, and that's what makes Mike Vrabel's situation particularly unique, right? I mean, how often do you see an NFL playoff team that comes available for a new head coach with a pretty wide-ranging roster of young talent on the cheap that's in a really, really important window in terms of where your quarterback, how much you're paying your quarterback, how much you're paying your I guess premium positions like left tackle, that you have these guys at value and that you can make a push for it right now and plug your roster, plug the holes on your roster with more expensive free agents that can help you, put you over the top right away, and guys like Deion Lewis and Malcolm Butler. I think that Mike Vrabel, I think, like, they're aware of it, that the expectations are pretty high. But, I mean, it's one of those things where you just have to, like, take a step back. And I know we live in an instant gratification type society. It's really hard to play quarterback at a high level in the NFL. And I think that people really, really undervalue. Like, I feel like I come off as a Marcus apologist, but, like, it's really tough to have four different offenses or three different offenses in 4 years like he's had, and then have to adapt to that on a regular basis. It's what you've known your entire career as a professional. So there's going to be an adjustment period, and all the noise that's around it, I think at present is probably overblown in terms of how often we see Marcus look bad or Malcolm Butler look bad or something like that. I think I don't feel comfortable making judgments about a football team until, like, the first four games of the regular season, because I really don't think you know what you have until then. Like, that's probably a good sample size, and until then, I don't really care to make judgments on what their football team should look like, or I don't like to analyze football until after football's been played, you know.
Well, if you look at the stats, you might want to pay a little bit closer attention than the first four games, because stats show us you get off to the slow start, your goose may be cooked. I mean,
well, especially because they start off with two divisional games. So they open in Miami, they have two divisional games against the Jags and the Texans, and then they play the defending Super Bowl champions. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, especially if they start slower than people expect them to, because we all know that Matt LaFleur is coming down here to reinvent offense, right?
Well, also, there'll be a lot of attention on, let's say, the Dolphins is a game right now where you're saying, we got to win that game. You should win that game. But that's the most likely game that you might see some of these growing pains in trying to get everything in and feeling like you have a deep understanding of the scheme. So that's going to be the dilemma. So I think one thought I've had along those lines, Buck, is one thing that would really help is to be able to just pound away and run the ball really, really well. That would just take care of a lot of issues. And that's one of the hardest things I think you can't really tell how the running game is going to be in these practices, right? So
no.
what indications do you have, or what indications do you think the coaching staff has that the running game will be where they want it to be?
Yeah, no, that's a good point you bring up, Willie. Because if you're not comfortable with how, if you don't think you are where you need to be with the running game or with the passing game, then you should be able to rely on your running game and your defense. But in the same turn, if you box yourself in like that, you're going to become hugely predictable, and then you become exotic smash mouth, because everybody knows what you want to do. So you can't lean on that for too long before teams start to figure you out. I think we'll get a pretty good indication of what the running game looks like fundamentally in the second and third preseason games, at least with the first team offense, and then just kind of, you know, get a good measure on how the running back depth looks with Flewellen and Akram Wadley probably being the fourth running back in the next two preseason games against the Bucs and the Steelers. Just on how technically sound they are. Like, I know they're not going to be giving away a lot of misdirection run plays, and, like, they're not going to be doing a ton schematically, because why would you do that so early on and let teams kind of figure out what you're doing? But I think the next two games should be a pretty good indicator on how they feel about the running game and if they can use it to effectively set up play action and bootlegs and stuff that Marcus Mariota is really good at, and then let the passing game progress from there.
What did Jalen Ramsey say about you?
That I have excellent hair, but that I would be a trash quarterback.
Well, you just stand in line. That's basically what he said about everybody else.
Me and Joe Flacco both. Great hair, terrible NFL quarterback. It's fine.
Hey, good thing you did this live hit today with us, because this will just prepare you for your live show tomorrow.
6 to 8 p.m. Tackling Music City, me and Joe Rexroad. We will be reacting and previewing preseason game number two. Exciting stuff.
Thank you, Buck.
Thank you, guys.
He's Buck Rising. You just heard it. His show will be 6 to 8 tomorrow live. He'll have Joe Rexroad, the columnist for the Tennessean. We'll come back, another preview. We'll talk about the Broncos. What's in store for them this season? We do that next on 102.5 The Game. Don't forget ESPN 94.9 Game 2. It's your official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen this Saturday, Nashville SC, they'll hit the road, take on Louisville City FC. Pregame at 6:15, kickoff at 6:30, only on ESPN 94.9 Game 2, powered by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers and Great Clips. We'll have a chance for you to win MTSU football season tickets coming up soon. A little trivia question before we get out of here today. Titans and Bucks Saturday night, Nissan Stadium, under the lights. I do think, and it's in, you know, you brought up the cut. So they, by the way, they've gotten rid of that. They now keep all the bodies till the end. Remember they used to whittle everything down?
Yeah.
No more whittling.
I had just forgotten about that.
You're here one day, and then as everything, the preseason wraps up, it's you're either here or you're gone.
So I guess that's where I guess my mind was a little confused about Mike Vrabel's answer about I feel like it's still training camp. Because honestly, only we're accustomed to them always practicing in their practice facility. They've only done it one time, right? Practice anywhere but there.
Yep.
In Clarksville. That was years and years ago.
And
but
that
there
was hot.
And there are some teams that do go north to try to stay cooler. I guess that is the distinction of when training camp ends. In my mind, I always thought of the end of training camp is when you start cutting the roster down, but I forgot. So really, training camp to a Titans fan, other than that you can't go to the practices, but the way they evaluate their roster, nothing really changes.
Well, they did have a training camp a long, 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 long time ago at Tennessee State. That's because they didn't have a home.
Right. But you know what I'm saying? Like from Mike Vrabel's perspective, he's still got the same guys there. He's working on the same things. Technically, the end of training camp doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
But I would think that even though you can keep the roster pretty big, at some point you do have to start focusing more on the guys you know are going to be there. I wonder what that feeling's like when you're one of those practice bodies and you start realizing I'm really not in the plans. Because he's got to start getting his roster shaped for the regular season. Now, those guys are going to get a chance to play in the last preseason game, but a lot of those guys will just be playing to showcase themselves for elsewhere. But this is an important part, I think, for Mike Vrabel, because this is new. He's got to have those guys ready. I go back to what we talked about in the last segment with that Dolphins game. That really needs to be a win. But if you're,
especially if,
but it's
if
it's
we
reasonable
all think they're gonna
to
sink
say
the Dolphins,
and they may not, but it's reasonable to say that the Titans will have a much better feel for the new system in week 8 than week 1. The reality is it's going to take some time, but they have to be ready to win a game on week 1.
But why does it need to take time? It didn't take
because
time for the Rams last year. Sean McVay was 28 years old. It didn't take time.
I'm just basing it on what everybody says.
The Rams went from the worst pile of crap offense we've ever seen to look what they did. So, I mean, why does it need to take long?
Sometimes
why do you need
it does.
Time to, but we just have an example last year. It didn't take long
I
at
can
all.
Get, but there are plenty of examples where it did take time.
All right, let's head out to Denver. Troy Rink is with us, Broncos insider for Denver 7 News. Troy, how you doing?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We talked a little bit earlier. We got a Chiefs preview as we're kind of looking at that division. When you look right now, sitting here in training camp / preseason, how do the Broncos stack up against the rest of the division?
Well, the defense has come back to them, or excuse me, the division has come back to them a little bit, so that helps. But I'd still see them as a third place team in the West right now, a team that could perhaps contend longer, maybe get 8-8 type season. People forget the Broncos. Not only did they go 5-11 last year, they were 2-10 over their last 12 and were non-competitive in 8 of those games. So I'm not as bullish on them as some. Like, I got to see it because their offense is just makes your retina bleed the last 2 years. So I got to see improvement. And, again, they are better in theory. They're better. But, again, they're in prove-it mode. And so the Chiefs are going to – here's the thing I do say about the Chiefs, with all due respect to, you know, Chiefs fans. You're not going to be better by trading Alex Smith and Marcus Peters. Those were their two best players I watched the last 2 years, and you just traded them. And I like Patrick Mahomes. I've known about him because LaTroy Hawkins is his godfather. I've known LaTroy for 15 years, and he's been telling me about that kid. So I'm rooting for the kid. But if you think he's going to throw 25 touchdowns with five picks as a rookie, there's no way. That'd be the greatest rookie season in the history of the position, right? So they're going to come back. I would see the Chargers, even though with their injuries, as the slight favorite this year.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that because you're right. I mean, now that you put – I mean, Alex Smith had a career year last year. He was off the charts. He's been playing a long time and had a career year last year. And Marcus Peters is a tremendous talent. I think, obviously, they got a little sick of the antics off the field or behind the scenes, and they moved on from him. But you're right. I mean, they just lost their best players on both sides of the ball, and yet – we still think they're going to be really, really good. Maybe it's the respect for Andy Reid in the regular season. I don't know.
That's fair. As he's proven it. I'm just saying they've come back to the pack for me.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me, honestly, if a 9-7, 10-6 type of record won the division. I don't see. The thing is, the Chiefs have owned the AFC West. They sweep the division. I mean, the Broncos, if you want to know how it's changed for the Broncos since they won a Super Bowl, they haven't won an AFC West road game since Peyton Manning retired.
Wow.
So out of the gate, every year they're losing three road games. Last year they were 1-7 on the road and didn't win until they beat that, you know, just awful Colts team. And so unless Denver can win three games on the road, and then you're thinking, okay, you go 6-2 at home, 5-3, and then see where you see can you hang around all year. And we'll see. They're better. They had a remarkable draft class. I couldn't be more bullish on this draft class. But better means what? 5-11 to 8-8? That's what I'm not sure on yet.
Okay, let's start with that draft class. So obviously, they had the fifth pick in the draft, and they go with Bradley Chubb. I mean, most people had him as kind of one of those top five can't-miss guys. How's he looked thus far?
You know, he's a versatile guy. He's unique. I mean, he writes a diary of havoc at times in practice. He's 6'4", 6'5", 270, and he can play with his hand in the dirt, so he can legitimately stop the run at his size. And he's also a pass rusher. So, you know, he's already moved up to the starting spot on the depth chart. I expect big things from him. But big things might be 6.5 sacks with consistent pressure and good in the run game. I mean, people are, you know, Vegas has him as a favorite to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. I think that's a little ambitious right now, but I think he's going to be a good player and will eventually be a great player from the guy I've seen on the field.
It was a real mixed bag on Courtland Sutton. I remember us looking at all the mocks, and, I mean, there was a time, Troy, when people had him as a first-round pick. He obviously slipped to the second round. The Broncos took him with the eighth pick in the second round. Courtland Sutton, the wide receiver out of SMU, what have you seen from him thus far?
Yeah, no rookie's had a better camp than Courtland Sutton. I mean, he is physically a marvel at 6'4", 225. I haven't seen a receiver with that body type since maybe Demaryius Thomas' second year and Brandon Marshall, the receiver, back in his heyday here, his salad days here. They say the joke is, you know, every 50-50 ball with Courtland Sutton is an 80-20, and it hits to his advantage. He's mastered the fade route already. Now, he's obviously got to be more accomplished in the rest of the route tree, so he's not predictable, but he's clearly their number three receiver now, a position, frankly, we've had almost no production from over the last couple of years. So they're really bullish on Sutton. And when you see him out here, it's hard not to get excited by the athleticism. He's just different. Like a long, long time Broncos guy here, you know, been in the building forever, told me he is convinced he'll be a star. I don't want to go there yet, but, man, there's a lot to like. We'll see. Hopefully he does it in a game in the next week or two where the fans get an idea of what we've seen at training camp.
We're talking to Troy Rink, Broncos insider for Denver 7 News, covering the Broncos. And Troy, I'm sure you guys have discussed it backwards and forwards, but it's really intriguing from here to sort of ask what the Broncos saw in Case Keenum to give him the contract that he did, because there are great stories from the past like a Brad Johnson or a Jim Plunkett or Rich Gannon, the sort of those late bloomers that become really productive quarterbacks after really not being much of a factor for a while. It all came together for him last year. But can he duplicate that and really lift the Broncos roster?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question. You know, is he a one-hit wonder like the Macarena, or is this him? This is just his career jumping-off point. And the reason they like Case Keenum is, let's be honest, they wanted Cousins. That was their top target. Cousins got $84 million guaranteed. They quickly found out in the minutes of negotiating that wasn't going to happen because they already have Von Miller on a similar contract. They weren't going to have two players on those contracts. So they shifted to Keenum, and they got him, frankly, at a price point that is really advantageous. $25 million guaranteed, two-year deal. Blake Bortles really undercut Keenum's market when he signed. So because you think Keenum got less than Brock Osweiler. And Osweiler really hadn't done anything other than five games in a backup role. Case Keenum won 13 games last year. But you ask, what are they like? He gives some stability at the position. They know who their guy is. No more decision. These American Idol auditions of who's going to win the job. I mean, it just submarines their offense, not having certainty at that position. And Case is a leader. They know. Now we know, finally, since Ben retired, who's the leader on offense? No question, it's Case Keenum. He's been more accurate than a DNA test in practice. He passes well. Only Drew Brees completed more at a higher frequency than he did last year. But we haven't seen it in a game. And that's where fans are impatient. And I get it. Because their offense the last couple of years again has been dreadful. So this is kind of the week people are expecting to see Case Keenum playing a quarter and a half and see again what we've seen in camp, which a guy who commands the huddle and is accurate. But they need to figure out the running game if Case Keenum's going to look like he did last year. Because Case Keenum throwing 30, 35 times a game, they will be disappointed at that player. Case Keenum throwing 25 times a game will protect the ball and make good decisions. But that's only going to happen if they run the ball.
Are they prepared as we wrap this up to admit Paxton Lynch is a bust?
They're there. If you can't see that, if he hasn't reached the end of his Broncos career, you can see it from here. Once he got demoted to third team, but Chad Kelly, remember, he has been beat out twice by a seventh rounder and now a third time by a seventh rounder. No longer is Chad Kelly Mr. Irrelevant. Now that's Lynch. I mean, they've given him every chance to win jobs, and he just is unable to secure it. And I'm not saying they've been perfect in how they developed him because they changed coaches, they changed coordinators. But this was the year, guys, in year three, he was going to take the step forward and show, yes, this is who we think he can be. And instead, he's regressed. I mean, he got beat out by Chad Kelly. Kelly hadn't played a game in 646 days and went out and clearly outplayed him and moved up to second team this week. So I would be surprised as we sit here today if he's on the roster when training camp ends. I just don't see it. When the preseason's over, I would be surprised if Lynch is on the Broncos. Mm.
Yikes. Troy, thanks for the visit. Really appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Have a great show.
All right. Thank you. Troy Rank covers the Broncos. He's a Broncos insider for Denver 7 News. We'll give you a chance to win MTSU season tickets, a trivia question, to wrap up the show next on 102.5 The Game. Another fast-moving show today. Looking forward to tomorrow. We'll wrap up the week. Right now, your chance to win a pair of MTSU football season tickets. Yesterday, we had Deion Lewis. Today, we had Derrick Henry. Yesterday, we had Deion Lewis. Those are going to be the two featured backs for your Tennessee Titans this year. Good conversation with both, but yesterday out at camp, we talked to Deion Lewis. His time with the Patriots and a short time here. But the question is this. He told us that he was a kid that grew up in Albany, New York. Where did Deion Lewis play college football? Where did Deion Lewis go to school? 737-1025, 737-1025. Answer that, and you'll have a pair of MTSU football season tickets. Where did Deion Lewis attend school? Where was he running the football in college? Brant Snedeker, what a day for him, huh? 59? Gotta love that.
59, only the ninth player in PGA Tour history to shoot a 59 or better. And he's the first ever to do it after starting the round with a bogey. A phenomenal round for Brant Snedeker. So we'll see where it goes from here. But even if whether he wins the tournament or not, and it'd be great to see him win one, you get yourself on a board with some rare company for doing that. That's a fantastic day. 59. Meanwhile, a little baseball action going on. Tampa Bay leading the Yankees 2-0 at Yankee Stadium in the top of the sixth. Still no word on Aaron Judge. They were hoping he'd come back here pretty soon, but they're saying it's not going to be what they originally thought. It's going to be a little bit longer. Not that they have anything really to worry about, but the way the A's are playing, the way the Mariners are playing, might get a little hairy for the Yankees to make sure they make the wild card. Meanwhile, moment of silence. Darren, the Sounds winning streak is over at 15. No longer will I be badgering you.
They dropped one last night, so it's over. So what, they tied their own franchise record?
They tied their own franchise record.
No PCL record.
And it's raining right now, but hopefully they'll get another win in tonight and see if they can start a new winning streak.
And then, of course, tomorrow we will find out. Well, not really find out. We don't know. But all eyes are going to be on Delanie Walker. You know, he did leave practice today. And that's just one of those guys. We know injuries are inevitable in football. Injuries are inevitable in the NFL. But there are just certain guys you don't want to think about. And I'm not saying they are going to lose him. I'm just saying Delanie Walker is one of those guys they can't afford to lose, right? He's just too important to them.
Got to have him.
Got to have him. Now, what does that mean? That means probably you might not see him anymore in preseason.
And that would be fine. That would be fine.
Yeah. So find out a little bit more about Delanie Walker, who limped off from practice today as they wrap things up with the Bucks. Ryan Ellis and David Poyle are set to meet the media here in just a moment over at Bridgestone Arena. We spoke with Ryan Ellis a couple of days ago, his new 8-year extension that will kick in after this upcoming season. 8 years, $50 million guaranteed, $6.25 million per year. Willie, we had first caller nail it. First caller nailed it, Deion Lewis, Pittsburgh. That's where he played his college ball.
He did.
I remember him at Pittsburgh. I don't know if you do. I do.
I don't. It's been a long time.
Yeah. I mean, what, 7, 8 years?
What, his 7th or 8th year in the league?
This is maybe his 8th year in the league.
Played, I think, only 2 seasons at Pittsburgh before turning pro, right?
Yep.
Did he redshirt the first year?
I think so. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Everybody have a great rest of your day. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. to wrap up the week. We'll see you then.